Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, live from the Engage Esports Studios in Frisco, Texas. We're joined by two of the major thought leaders in the space with regards to all things esports data. Introducing first, most notably known for being a Esports Roundtable alumni, Nicole Pike, who jumped on the show a few months back to really announce everything that Nielsen was going to be doing in this space. And also on the show today we have Johannes Wallstein, the CEO of FanAI, a really revolutionary organization in the esports industry, working with multiple partners across the tier one orgs, really helping us to understand the esports fan, how they behave, and how we can build awesome products and experiences for them across the entire industry. So both of you, thank you so much for being on the show.
Definitely. Excited to be here.
Yeah, great to be here, Joe. Thanks for having us on.
Awesome. So I know that we were going to try and do this face-to-face around the Overwatch League finals. Unfortunately, we couldn't make that work, but really excited to have you on and just, you know, really dive into this in a bit more detail. So before we get started, Johannes, if you want to go first and just really take us through your story, your journey, and how you really stepped into this industry, and then Nicole, if you could kind of just add what's been new in your life since we last spoke to you.
Absolutely. So my background was analytics in retail and then analytics in pro sports. And my kind of entrance into esports was going to a DreamHack winter in Jönköping, Sweden. So I slept for four nights on an air mattress on a concrete floor with 8,000 other people. Played video games, watched Counter-Strike, watched Dota, watched League of Legends, and really kind of jumped into it with both feet. And after that, I was really hooked on competitive gaming and esports and left the startup I was in before. And 2 years ago, this July, founded FanAI to really focus on understanding who that audience is. So what do they buy outside of the venue? So working with big purchase behavior providers to look at all of the audience for our clients. And once we get into Optic, there's some really interesting insights about the Outlaws and the Optic fans. Working with LinkedIn to understand what jobs, what careers, what do esports fans earn, and really helping the leagues, the teams, the platforms, work with brands and agencies to have the ideal partnership. So since that DreamHack, I've been lucky enough to go to the international, go to finals for some of the world's coolest games like the Overwatch League final, which just happened.
That's awesome, man. Really exciting. And we met a few months back and it's been awesome just to really get an understanding of your product from a conceptual level and actually see how that's been applied to our teams. Nicole, how have things moved forward since we last spoke with you? The new clients that you've picked up, or you know, what's the progress that you've made with regards to evaluating sponsorship activations and values across the space?
Yeah, so lots of progress and fast, which is good, but sometimes hard to keep up with. So, you know, really, I think last time we spoke, we talked a lot about why Nielsen started our esports vertical and what our goals were. And I think, you know, on a great note, we've really been able to stick to our goals and expand the number of industry stakeholders that we're working with alongside those. So still very heavily focused on the sponsorship aspect of esports, helping to understand and measure the value of sponsorships. But I'd say, you know, one of the biggest trends in the past few months has been clients wanting to evolve past the kind of what and the numbers of things, though it's obviously still very important in a large part of our business, and looking more at kind of the why or the softer qualitative impact that sponsorship is having on brands, which is great to see that evolving in the same way that we do in the traditional sport and broader entertainment space. And, you know, obviously Overwatch League topic of the day, month, possibly quarter, if not year for esports. And, you know, related to that, I would say the biggest partnership that we've really kind of materialized, again, since we last spoke, is everything we're doing with Activision Blizzard across a number of their Overwatch and Call of Duty franchises, helping them to really understand the value they're providing to sponsors and, importantly, allowing them to report back to those partners so that there's transparency around what the partnership is delivering.
Sure. I mean, just having both of you, you guys having made so much progress in the space just really shows how rapidly this industry is maturing, but also how fundamentally important having like a very clear understanding of the audience is to really building a awesome foundation for esports moving forward. Just since we started the show back in August last year, the amount of very well-educated service providers has just exploded, and looking at evaluating not just a brand new league's performance with Overwatch, but also seeing the organic growth of new team brands spring out as a part of the Overwatch League, and just using that as a case study for how does significant investment into esports really play out in the first year. And I think everyone involved is going to be really happy with that so far. There's obviously going to be areas that the league, the teams, and the players, and also, you know, from a broadcasting perspective, can actually be improved upon. But, you know, the TLDR from the Overwatch League finals was in my mind, it was one of the most positive, awesome experiences that I've had at a finals for an event. Just the overall production was fantastic, and I will dive into this in a second, but it was just a fantastic experience just to really be part of esports history. Like, I think that everyone who watched on stream, who was there with their various partners or in the arena, will actually, you know, look back on this in the next 5 years when esports has continued to evolve and explode, that, you know, this was a really special moment for everyone.
Yeah, and I'd agree. I think, you know, Johannes talked about his first experience with esports. I think everyone within the esports community has a story like that, right? Of like what really sold them on why esports and why we're involved. And I think I would characterize, you know, Overwatch League as, for a lot of us that were there watching, a really like reaffirming moment that I think a lot of us are going to look back on if we haven't already, and think like, wow, okay, like this is how far the industry has come, and this is why we all believed, you know, there was something in this, because look at what they were able to put together in the first year. I think, again, just from a production and event and, you know, making sure that things went off with a bang at the end of the first season, that meant a lot to the community, in my opinion.
And it raises the bar for everybody else, which I think is also good. Some of the other leagues were resting on their laurels a little bit, and I think this will be a wake-up call that you can make production even better, you can put it on television successfully, and it can be run in a world-class way equal to the top traditional sports in the U.S. So I also think it will help move the quality of all of the production everywhere up.
100%. Like, I think if you look at how sponsor revenue has been brought in with Overwatch League, you know, versus the other sizable franchises globally, I think that they've done an absolutely fantastic job. So, you know, raising the bar is fantastic for the industry, but it's also fantastic for Activision Blizzard too, because you're really setting the standard that any other huge play for any existing or future esports title will always be held to the standard. So it's always quite good from a competitive standpoint for the Overwatch League to really have done so well and make it so hard to catch. But let's dive into the numbers slightly. Where do we feel like OWL has been a success in the first year? Where have been some of the weaknesses? Let's spotlight on the Overwatch League. Nicole, I know that you guys put out some pretty sizable metrics after the Overwatch League finals. So just what have been some of the main takeaways for you? And then Johannes, if you want to break it down from a team and fan perspective, what really stood out for you at the event, but also, you know, where would you want to see some improvement?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to start on the viewership side of things, which, like you said, we released some numbers, obviously, as Nielsen, with Overwatch League broadcasting on linear TV for the playoffs and finals. We have true Nielsen TV measurement data, which is always exciting. But then, of course, you know, Twitch has been the broadcast partner over the course of the season. So there's a lot of, you know, viewership that was driven through that as well, plus China, which I think is always kind of that extra number that sometimes we forget about. So, yeah, you know, kind of working with the league and coming up with what what they reported as their number in their press release, which is the average minute audience. They were at, you know, over 850,000 global viewers at an average minute audience standpoint, which I'm really proud of them for using and putting out that number, which is much more akin to kind of how TV measurement is used, right? Or is done from a viewership standpoint. We get all sorts of peak concurrents and uniques and, you know, different metrics that have been thrown around within esports. But I think one of kind of going back to them being transparent to their partners and to the broader esports community was them putting that number out, which was great. And I think, you know, for the first time since week one, if I'm correct, they peaked, going back to that metric, at over 300,000 on Twitch, which they were excited about. But the flip side, of course, is that they didn't necessarily, you know, for the playoffs, break their record from week one. So, you know, certainly from a viewership perspective, positive, great numbers for a single end of season event, but not necessarily, you know, the best that they had over the course of their season. I think the exciting thing, if you kind of think about esports and Overwatch League in the context of broader sports viewership, was really if you dig down into the US TV numbers, which again, you know, we're able to provide for this event and not necessarily for all esports events. We saw a third of TV viewers in the U.S. coming from the 18 to 34 demographic. And if you dig in closer into kind of comps across everything, Super Bowl, March Madness, MLS Cup, you name it, that is definitely the highest share of 18 to 34 year olds that we've seen across the major tent poles over the course of the past season. So, you know, people can say different things about how successful or not they felt the actual TV number Nielsen rating was, but I think from our perspective, and certainly from the leagues, like, that's the idea of bringing esports to TV, right? Is kind of recouping or bringing in that really valuable audience that we know is watching less TV and consuming on other forms of media. And that showed that esports and Overwatch League had the ability to bring some of them into the fold, more so than other sports.
Sure, that's fantastic. I mean, that's an amazing case study that, you know, really sells itself based on how there can be like a really strong relationship between, you know, the core expectations of esports, which is that everything is online, everything is live, but also, you know, parsing that back into the older world of TV broadcasting, which is obviously still such a significant market with regards to advertising and sponsorship dollars. So that's really exciting for sports entertainment platforms that are looking at experimenting with more esports content, but might not necessarily, they are excited about esports content, but they're not necessarily sure about what the conversion would be. I mean, there's been some ups and downs with various attempts at this from some other esports tournaments and organizations, so that's really, really positive. Johannes, from your side, thoughts on season one? What are some of the team partnerships or team numbers in terms of growth and engagement that you've been really impressed by? And also, is there anything that you took away from the Overwatch League finals that you would like to see be built and improved upon for next season?
Yeah, sure. So we started with more than half the leagues in the team, half the teams in the league. And when they started, they had no audience. No one had bought any merchandise. No one had signed up with emails. And they weren't exactly sure who the demographic of all of the people would be. So we worked with NYXL. We worked with Seoul Dynasty, with LA Valiant, with Houston Outlaws. And the signups have been quicker than we've seen in anything else other than Fortnite. So some of our clients went from zero to having just under a million people sign up. The smallest audiences are in the hundreds of thousands. And these are people signing up on OverwatchLeague.com. These are people signing up on the, buying the merchandise, entering giveaways. Some of the things that really surprised us are some things about, for instance, if we use Optic, which you're close to, and Houston Outlaws, is the gender split is much, much more even than for a lot of other a lot of other titles. So Counter-Strike and League of Legends is really, really male-dominated. Overwatch League and the Outlaws and Optic are much, much more even. The purchase behaviors are, on the whole, pretty similar to other esports categories, so a wealthy millennial audience. The spread of where those people are in the U.S. is very interesting. I mean, for Outlaws, it's very, very heavily Texas, but then it's also strongly New York. It's also strongly Chicago. It's strongly San Francisco and, unsurprisingly, L.A. where it is. So there's a super strong local contingent for each of the teams, but there seems to be an East Coast and West Coast contingent for each of the teams. So each of the teams are getting a certain portion of the LA audience and a certain portion of the East Coast audience, as well as their own audience. And then working through how that drives engagement for the partners and brands that are associated with it. I've done work on the Overwatch League partners for the league as well as for the teams, and it really, really works. So looking in QSR, it's driving a lot to the brands that are involved. Looking at the car companies, it's driving a lot to them as compared to their peers. So at a detailed level, looking at the millions of individual fans of the teams and then how they react to the brands and how they purchase in those categories, we're really finding that the engagement and the things that they're doing work. We've analyzed the millions of audience members from their actual emails, from their real purchase behaviors and how they're engaging with the sponsorship brands. And we've worked both with the brands for Overwatch League and for the individual teams. And the effect that you can see is really, really strong. Again, demographic is wealthy millennial. It's more evenly split between male and female than a lot of the other titles. We've seen the teams grow from having zero merchandise sales and zero email signups to the top teams having just under a million signups, and they'll cross a million early next season. So we've seen it go from very, very little data for the teams and the league in terms of first-party data to now being in the millions in less than a year and in just one season, which is phenomenal growth.
It's really exciting to see what brands that were affiliated with other esports teams have been able to kind of do with a slight little kickstart. I mean, I know for a fact that we've been so over the moon with how the Houston Outlaws have grown over the last few months. Like, in terms of jersey sale numbers, I think we're either right up there or we are at the top. Like, in terms of engagement with our brands, that's you know, that's just amazing for us with all of the local activations that we've been doing. But in my mind, looking at how the first year has played out, just in terms of the growth, the awesome partners that we've been able to bring in, the understanding of the audience, actually bringing in a new esports audience, like you were saying, actually making esports more accessible for all walks of the gaming life, that's fantastic. And that's one of the things that I really hope new titles or new esports ecosystems will start to raise up. I mean, we had our CEO, Chris Chaney, and Roman Bijard, our GM of Optic, were down at the Girl Gamer esports event down in Lisbon, and they were saying just the hub of activity there for the relatively tiny budget that they've been able to put together has been, frankly, just extremely impressive. So seeing how all walks of life are being able to engage into esports is very, very positive in my mind. An open question for both of you. What were you going to say?
I guess two things. One is Fortnite is doing that in spades as well. We're analyzing the first 8 weeks of their 8 million championship, and that's very, very broad demographic, from 8-year-olds to 50-year-olds, very, very high female component. And then the second thing is to answer your second question about some of the opportunities for Overwatch League. They've done a phenomenal job for season one, but they can definitely do more with more brand activations, more partner exposure at the venue and digitally. So if you go to a PAX or an E3 or a DreamHack, a technical sponsor, a name sponsor like Omen by HP would have laptops that you could play with there, swag that you could take away with, you could feel product and interact a little bit more with the partners. So I think there's certainly opportunity for Overwatch League and their partners to do more in-venue, around-venue, to give those partners a bit more experience and to provide really cool experiences for the fans. So the main focus, of course, was on the gameplay, but outside of that, I think they have a lot of opportunity there.
And also maybe not going for DJ Khaled would be a good learning for season two. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of the man, but it was great to have someone with that amount of stage presence at the event. It kind of raised it up slightly. But I would love to see the Overwatch League shoot a little bit higher with regards to the quality of the on-stage performance for entertainers next year. And I
overlap between the Overwatch audience. I mean, somebody like Tiesto or somebody more there would have had a way bigger social overlap.
Yeah, 100%. So that was a great bit of fan service, but let's hope that they build on it next year. So let's leave Overwatch League Season 1 there. Really interesting insight from both of you guys. Let's open it up to the overall state of the esports industry and how teams engage with their fans. This is really open for anyone, really, but we've seen rapid advancement across the space for organizations trying to understand how fans behave, where they act, what behaviors they exhibit, and also how open they are to seeing non-endemic brands actually move into this industry. So I guess the open question for both of you is, does esports as an industry know its fans, or is there a lot more that we can be doing to, when we speak with sponsors, when we speak with potential investors, when we say, look, we have this many followers on all of our social platforms?
So there's a huge amount to know about the esports fan. One of the big advantages in esports is that they're all digital natives. If they've ever had a cord, a lot of them have cut it, but a lot of them have never had television, never subscribed to a network. But that also means you can follow everything that they're doing. So our approach with our team clients, our platform clients, with our league clients, is to analyze all of the data that they have. So we don't take a sample or a subset. If they're 26 million fans, we try to understand everything that those 26 million fans are doing. And we do that by looking them up on LinkedIn, understanding what they earn, what their job titles are, what their educational history is. We understand what their purchase behavior is offline and online with our big purchase behavior partners, which are the major credit card firms and purchase firms, so that we can really understand who is this demographic, not just a general age range or socioeconomic background, but in detail, how do they buy in the airline industry, or how do they travel in hotels? How do they purchase insurance? How are they buying data from their data provider? What do they do in mobile, if you're working with mobile? So I think the ability to understand an entire audience is much more difficult in traditional sports, because a lot of them pay cash at the venue. They're less millennial, they're older audiences in some of the traditional sports. So I think esports has the opportunity to really understand in great detail, and we're now working with a majority of the teams in the leading leagues and the leading platforms. So I think it's really starting to change, and the brands and agencies are starting to demand some of that. So the CMOs are getting much more sophisticated. Some of the early honeymoon hype of being excited just to be in the space, some of that is now being replaced with some realism on how are we going to do this in a more deliberate way. So it's a really exciting time and a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I 100% agree. You know, when we're going into our brand conversations, the what is esports piece of the education isn't really necessary anymore. It's more why Infinite, why Optic, why the Houston Outlaws, why the Esports Stadium Arlington. It's mining down into what really sets you apart from the rest of the industry. And that's one of the things that I was calling for before the podcast went on a little break earlier this year, was there needs to be a unique narrative and selling position for every team brand and league out there. It's not enough just to say we have access to a younger audience and we speak to them in a very authentic way. Now it's why is one team or one league a better fit for a specific brand or product, which is a really exciting space for us to be.
Yeah, so Joe, I completely agree with kind of, you know, what you called your call, quote unquote, to the industry. The way I think about it, you know, to your first question, do esports organizations, teams know their fans? My immediate answer to that is like, yes, because they've built them and brought them and are interacting with them on a daily, sometimes hourly basis on social media and Twitch and all of that. I think they know their fans. I think it's harder for them to describe their fans, and I think it's even harder for them to differentiate their fans, to kind of your last point. So when I work with those types of organizations, and on the flip side, when I work with brands, those are kind of the different things that I look for in terms of, okay, here's what you should be asking the different organizations, here's what you should expect from them in terms of what they're pitching to you. And it's no longer esports are great and growing and here's the revenue by, you know, this date and time. It's a lot more granularity around what they can offer and also kind of what ideas they can bring to the table. You know, all the different trends in esports, a big one right now is original content and partnering with teams or leagues or, you know, different esports companies as a brand to be able to leverage, you know, the fan relationships that they have through more original content outside of the actual broadcast environment. But for a team to actually know what their strength is in that, bring that to a brand and have an idea ready to go when they get in the pitch, as opposed to 6 months down the partnership line saying, oh shoot, we had this line item in our contract that we need to fulfill, what should we do? I think that's kind of more where the direction that conversations are going and or need to go for more and more brands to feel comfortable and frankly for them to feel okay with, in some cases, ceding the control they have over a particular partnership or content generation and saying, okay, Team X, I trust you to take my brand and work with it in the best way that you know your team can enhance it.
Yeah, it's fundamental for any, especially non-endemic brand that has built up, you know, a history and a respect in the industry, regards to any form of partnership where you are lending your brand, your IP, your player rights, your product into a new area, you know, having a very sagittarius approach to that by really understanding the environment that you're stepping into and actually everyone being as open as possible in the weaknesses and strengths. I think that's going to be crucial for doing business in a wider sense, but it's one of the things that I'm really glad to see that esports is doing more. Let's kind of zoom out for 1 second, because one of the pieces that Johannes touched on earlier really sparked a light bulb for me. Looking at how esports organizations and leagues compare to the world of sport, be it the NBA, the NFL, Major League Soccer, EPL. Another open question for both of you, but where do you really see the biggest learning from data-driven products that live in the sports industry that esports should look to adopt in the next 12 to 18 months? Now, I'm obviously not looking for you guys to rumble any of your new releases or aspects to your business, but in a wider sense, what would you like to see teams and leagues actually putting together so that they can, one, build an awesome proposition for their fans, but also through this product will gain a more significant granular understanding of how their fans behave, be it locally, be it online, be it purchasing behavior? What are your thoughts there?
We're already working with some of the pro sports teams and leagues. So we work with Orlando Magic, with Cleveland Cavaliers, Madison Square Garden, 26 teams in the NBA development team, working with the NBA team marketing and business operations for the NBA. And I think Adam Silver and the NBA are some of the most forward-looking. They've created their own esports league with NBA 2K. They're interested in Twitch, so they're streaming a lot of the Development League, G League games on Twitch. They're trying to go after a much younger demographic. They have a younger demographic. And they're also, they have a great thirst for understanding that better. So they understand the people that come to the venue, but who are the people that are following them on Twitter? Who are the people that are following them on Twitch that buy their merchandise? So if you look at the 40 million followers that LeBron James has, the Cavs don't really understand who those people are or how to segment them or what to do with them or how to market to them. And so our ability to enrich a Twitter handle or a Twitch ID, be able to take their email list of their millions of merchandise transactions and really understand the purchase behaviors of those people, the earning power, the where those people live, what their jobs are, is helping them and their partners engage in a much more personalized way and a much more relational way than they've ever been able to do before. So I think our main focus as a company is esports, but we're also starting to work with some of the pro sports leagues and teams, starting with the NBA, to help them understand their audience and help their partners provide experiences that their passionate fans will love. So I think sports is learning a lot from esports and learning a lot from the type of advanced AI techniques that are being developed for esports.
Awesome. From the angle of the question was more looking at, are there any other products that aren't yet evident in the esports or aren't yet kind of all over the place with in esports that sports already does very well that helps them understand their fans. I mean, like, you know, one of the things that really jumps out for me is just looking at how rich the OTT plays are in the sports industry. Just looking at either if it's exclusive streams, if it's exclusive content, looking at how you can engage with fans so they spend more time on the various platforms, be that with teams or leagues, just in the ecosystem as a whole. Looking at how sports teams specifically approach that is really interesting from my side.
Yeah, so I can, you know, I can chime in on that. I obviously have being from Nielsen, and we work really closely with our sports team and have done a lot of good kind of cross vertical workshops for sports and esports, and have had sports folks come in and talk to esports folks about, you know, what they're doing and what sports teams and organizations are finding helpful. I think there's a few things there. So I think the first, just to piggyback on my comment earlier around content, is like, yeah, working content into deals is great. The fact that esports has Twitch as a platform for that is amazing, and something that, you know, Johannes, to your point, traditional sports is jealous of in many cases, having that direct contact to, you know, the people that you watch and follow the most is, you know, can't be rivaled. I think what sports has done, even if they may not have as much of that kind of in between broadcast or, you know, non-match day interaction with their fans per se, is they've done more and more of their organizations are doing a really good job researching and putting a lot of science behind what content it is that they put out there. So like in Nielsen, we think about that in part as the fan story and kind of all of the different touch points and elements of your team or organization that your fan wants to know about outside of the actual match day. And Johannes, to your point, and some of what you guys are doing, some of that is what they buy, but it's also just what is their interest and personal connection to the team or league or whatever it may be that they are connected with, and how do you take advantage of that and give them more of what they want so that they become even more engaged and sticky as a fan. And there's some really smart sports organizations out there right now that aren't just throwing Twitter posts up at the wall or doing, you know, random 30-second clips. They have some pretty intense machines and research going behind the scenes to figure out what that best content is, and then obviously to measure it after the fact, though I know that's becoming more and more common in esports. So I'd say that's probably one one piece of things. I'd say the second, especially as non-endemics become more and, you know, more and more engaged with esports and are spending more, is kind of moving from the, and maybe I should say complimenting, because it's some of what we do, but on top of understanding the dollar value associated with the sponsorship and even kind of like the sentiment, is actual sales lift, right? So looking at the impact on sales of a packaged good product because it was associated with esports, and being able to really isolate that. It's something that sports and entertainment does a lot, and does with Nielsen, and things that we're kind of talking with clients about as well as more of those companies get in the space. And I think a side bit to that is, in general, this is kind of half trend, half research, is just retail activation in general, right? And as that happens, there's going to be the need to measure it and take advantage of it. But we haven't seen a lot of that, if any, in esports, is actually that brick and mortar, or, you know, with the esports audience, move to Amazon as well. But even online retailer, that interaction, direct kind of connection, partnership, cross promotion, that's very common in the traditional sports space. I mean, everyone knows Wheaties, right? Think of that for esports. And I think that's probably a trend that we'll start to see exploited and then in turn measured in the next couple of years as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I, for one, am very excited to see how, at a macro commercial level, that esports and sports start to kind of swap ideas back and forth with regards to how we understand our fans, how esports and sport can collaborate to access different audiences, but also just, you know, raise the overall quality of the products that we push out to our fans, be that through merchandise, original content, or on stream. I think that through the continued improvement in machine learning technologies as well, like, the whole industry is hearing rumblings about what SAP are doing for the esports teams over on the West Coast. We as well, with GGEA, have a very clear understanding of how we can speak to emerging esports talent and how we evaluate that, and what are the key KPIs that we're putting together to really profile the future generation of pros. So there's a huge amount of potential for us to streamline this industry and really build up a lot more of that infrastructure that still isn't there from a global, regional, national, and local level. And, you know, this is really just a start. If we look at how innovation will play forward as well, you know, when the advent of 5G rolls around with low latency, the overall level of play and also accessibility to services across entertainment as an entire industry is just going to be raised up. I mean, if you're looking at the state of esports play, once that is enabled, just looking at it from an innovation standpoint, you know, the overall state of play is going to be completely raised, and the accessibility to activations, online events, and just speaking with the global community is going to be, it's just going to be a really exciting place to be in the next few years. So really excited to be here with you guys at this point, and, you know, we'll be able to look back on all of these podcasts that we do together as just kind of a snapshot in history, just like the Overwatch League finals a few weeks back. A question before we head into the rapid fire round, which is going to be have to be pretty rapid because there's two of you. just a quick snapshot of your thoughts around the state of analytics and platforms that are put together for in-game performance. I know it's not necessarily where both of your business units are focused. You know, going back to the examples I just gave, there has to be a massive opportunity for organizations to improve the level of practice and the quality of life for players with data-based their products and solutions as well. So any thoughts on where you'd like to see any improvement, any standouts for you? Just
so I can say on our end, was it 2 years ago almost at this point, Nielsen acquired a company called Gracenote, which does a lot of like real-time stats collection in the traditional sports side of things, and powers a lot of like the environments that you would see on a TV running, like on smart TVs running alongside live events, to kind of give up-to-date or real-time stats updates and that sort of thing. So we've certainly looked at it as part of that and it's part of that kind of business model, and there's certainly opportunity there. You know, there's some more established esports where I feel like a lot of that is being collected and maybe just needs to be more specifically kind of called and analyzed, but the data is already there. I think there's a lot of opportunity, especially as kind of some of the, you know, newer games continue to come out and there isn't that legacy data set. I think what I am personally interested in, though not necessarily going to be the one or the company to do it, is also just kind of more on like the neuroplyometric side of things, right? So not hard stats, but kind of, you know, measuring what's happening with the body during different competitions. There's certainly been a handful of teams that have adopted some of that. And speaking of kind of pulling things over from the traditional sport world, you know, there's more and more of that happening. And I imagine we'll see some of that kind of pull over. But Johannes, maybe you've got a better sense of how teams are actually leveraging some of that today, given some of your relationships.
Yeah, we work with a bunch of teams. So as you mentioned, SAP stepped in with Team Liquid to do player analytics for them. You have Dojo Madness, who also have BitCraft, who's an investor in us, is an investor in them. You have Mobalytics, Gamer Sunsay. Also, all of those businesses are looking at various aspects of gameplay. So from the pro level down to amateurs trying to get better. One of the challenges for all of those businesses is that the characters and the meta and weighting of the different characters inside the game changes very often. So unlike basketball or soccer or NFL, where the rules don't really change, the number of players don't really change, and you can analyze what's going on and it stays pretty consistent, you have big changes in the game. And so you see some teams that were very, very strong, like New York Excelsior or Seoul Dynasty, who are very strong on some of the characters earlier in the Overwatch season. When the season then made changes to how those characters were weighted, how their ultimates and how their kind of their powers change as compared to other characters, some of the teams really struggled. And the challenge for a predictive model is you've built a model around millions of hours of gameplay based on a certain weighting, and then that weighting suddenly changes, and you need to then reassess how you choose the different champions, how you play them. So it's a really interesting math problem and artificial intelligence problem, and there are several businesses that are trying to tackle that.
Yeah, I mean, if there is a way to white label the ability to analyze a patch and the varieties per update, that's going to be huge. So super excited for that. Guys, we have really pushed the envelope on on the time for this. Let's jump into the rapid fire piece. But before we do that, just thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate all the insight here, and it's an amazing snapshot for those that might not necessarily have access or knowledge of the conversations and the products that are being built in this industry to really understand how everyone is taking this aspect of esports very, very seriously, and how even small advancements in how we can improve player performance or understanding of our fans or give strong feedback to the brands that are in the space, how fundamentally important every improvement in that area is to ultimately professionalizing this industry and raising the bar of potential. So yeah, I just really appreciate you guys dropping some knowledge here. Let's go into rapid fire round real quickly. Johannes, as this is your first time on the podcast, I'll go to you first. Who has been your biggest mentor in life or in business, and what was the best piece of advice that you've received?
So Greg Tutton, known him for 16 years. I was working for a startup in Silicon Valley in 2002. He said, go to Europe. You have an EU passport. There are lots of countries coming into the EU. I chose Prague and the Czech Republic to go to. I met my wife in Prague. We now have three children. I moved to London, started four businesses in London, and that was the best advice that I ever took, which was leaving Silicon Valley, and then now I've come back. So that's one of the the most important parts of my life.
That worked out pretty well for you, right? And Prague is a beautiful place. It's one of my favorite cities in Europe. Nicole, these are slightly different questions from last time. who is your most important mentor been, and if they gave you any advice, what resonated with you?
Yeah, so I've been lucky enough to have a lot of mentors. So I'm going to focus this one on one that I currently have, actually within Nielsen, who has been all over all different parts of the business and is now leading up a large part of our TV business. And as I was moving into this, my full-time role now with esports, I think some of the best advice he gave me, with this being kind of a newer business unit, is if you go above your numbers, everyone's going to say your goal was too low. If you don't hit them, everyone will say it's too high. So just like focus on your day to day, do what you can, and make sure you're doing right by clients. And it sounds kind of cliche, but you guys are in the business, every stress or up or down that I hit, instead of, I freak out for a little bit and then I focus back on that, and it keeps me on track every day. So that's one that stuck.
No, that's good. I mean, you can only approach a larger vision or dream or strategy one day at a time. 100% agree with that. As an extension of that point, I'm going to go ahead and actually assume both of your answers for the next question, which is esports has no working hours. What specific part of your life outside of work actually keeps you sane? And I'm going to go ahead and say that it's going ahead and spending time with your kids. Is that right?
Definitely.
Yeah, that helps. That and AirPods, so I can walk during conference calls.
Okay. AirPods.
AirPods, like the wireless headsets, the Apple headsets.
Sorry, I thought it's something that you wore on your feet for a second. That sounds pretty stupid. I don't know why. Johannes, you were going to say something.
Yeah, and going on airplane mode. So when I'm with my wife and children in the evening, I put my phone on airplane mode, and then check in after they're in bed. But that stops at least our family time from being interrupted by the endless SMSs and emails and Slack messages and Discord messages that I get.
Yeah, I mean, these amazing products like Slack have enabled businesses to be so much more efficient and everyone to be so accessible. But, there has to be some time for everyone to switch off and actually decompress. So 100% agree. And the final question, we'll go back to Johannes for this one to get us started, but what is your motto, if you have one, and what does it mean to you?
I don't really have a single motto, but when I was thinking about that, I really thought about you being in Texas and Friday Night Lights, and thinking about all you can do is really the best that you can possibly do. And in a startup, that's particularly important, because if you don't do it, there's no big organization to do it around you. So I guess if there would be a motto, it's that, both for myself and everyone in our company, is to do everything that you can do in that situation, to not leave anything undone that you can possibly do. And there's great honor in that. There isn't anything better that you can do. So that's kind of the culture that we try to live in FanAI.
Cool. It's preaching excellence and taking pride in what you do in and outside of business. 100% agree, but if you ask me that on a Sunday morning, maybe not. Nicole, your motto, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, so mine, especially as of late, has been notice where you're spending your energy. I feel like there's tons of mottos out there around spend your time on what you want to do and on what matters, but we all know there's a ton of stuff we spend time on that doesn't feel like it matters, that it's contributing anything momentous to our lives. But what I think about is where my mental energy is going. And if I'm stressing about something that's not important, that needs to change. Save my energy for the things that are either most exciting or that require the most attention, and let everything else just, stay even keel.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Always important to prioritize. I always find that if I do get in a situation where there was a lot mentally on the plate, that just kind of writing out a short list of aims to chug through, that normally puts me on the right track. Awesome, guys. Well, really appreciate the emotional vulnerability of, going into what drives you as people on this beautiful planet, and also your insight into the esports industry. How can everyone reach out to you if they want to get in touch, if they want to learn about all what you guys have been doing in esports?
For me, it's easy, nicole.pike@nielsen.com. Anyone can contact me, and I'm also fairly active on LinkedIn, trying to throw some interesting things out there. So follow me there, too.
Awesome.
Yeah. Same with me. So johannes@fanai.io or Johannes Weierstein on LinkedIn. So both easy to get in touch with me.
Awesome. Okay, guys, well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Esports Roundtable. Thank you very much for tuning in. If you want to reach out to us, please hit me up on Twitter @BarelyQualified or Joe Hills on LinkedIn. Really excited to have the Esports Roundtable moving back onto our weekly schedule and bring you more awesome insight from the leaders of the esports industry. Have a great week and stay tuned for us next week. Awesome, guys. See ya.